Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon. And our brother David is not with us this week, but we have our traditional second weekend of the month guests, Mr. Zeke Acosta and Mr. Scott Shelton. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, good morning.
So we're doing heating and cooling as we traditionally do. Guys, always appreciate your first being out there every single week, taking questions for us and taking care of customers, but also taking a couple hours once a month to do this sort of stuff. And so we appreciate it. I've got a list of almost a dozen things that I would love to talk to you guys about, but George is already calling in. So we're taking calls this morning at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. And George has done that, so I guess we should talk to George. Good morning, George. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Appreciate it very much, buddy. I have a Lennox heat pump. I had a semi-annual check on June, and they said that my outside unit is slowly leaking, and they gave me operation number of 204 high, 74 low, but the long and the short is that they said that my furnace is okay, but my air conditioning part, they cannot sell me any of the Freon or whatever it is. It's too expensive, and that I've got to get another one. My question is, can you help me or advise me about what I should do?
So, guys, what? I guess he's asking to validate, does he need to get another one? Then if yes, how does he go about doing that?
Well, doesn't sound like they're giving him the opportunity. If the coil is available, which it may not be readily available, but there's no limit on the refrigerant. I mean, whether it's R22 or R410A, they are expensive. I would think they should at least give you the option to make that choice for yourself than just trying to force you to buy a new unit.
Yeah, it says operating 204 high low, something about R22 beside it. another thing, they said, well, we can change this over so you'll only get the it's hard to explain. The natural gas this winter. So we cut it on a couple weeks ago, and the heat coming out is just fine. But the
that's not related,
right,
George. So the heat is one thing. The Freon or the refrigerant is entirely different. So let me try to summarize this. Somebody came out and said you're leaking refrigerant, which is a problem.
Leaking refrigerant.
Right.
Yeah.
So your concern is, hey, they're telling me to get a new unit versus just putting refrigerant in there. And
and
I want to be careful how I say this, but it's kind of like going to the tire store and saying, hey, my tire's leaking air. Just keep putting air in it. I don't want you to fix it. Now, your challenge is one way is to pull out the nail and plug it. The other is to buy an entirely new tire, right?
That's right.
Okay, so we're trying to figure out, Scott and Zeke, how old is your system, George? Do you know?
I purchased it November of 07, so it's exactly 14 years old.
Okay.
Service Experts, which is now Comfort Air.
So, got it. So, so I think, Zeke, Scott, I'll let you guys talk to this, but they may not have done the – done it the best way, but it sounds like they're thinking through, by the time you pay for refrigerant, which you're going to put in, and then it's going to leak back out again unless you figure out where it's leaking, which I think, Scott, that's where you're going with the coil, then they just kind of said, hey, look, at 14 years old, we put, by the time we put refrigerant in here twice, you've made a pretty serious down payment on a new unit. Am I thinking right?
You are.
So I think,
and you figure a 14-year-old heat pump is a 28-year-old air conditioner because it runs summer and winter. So, you know, it's if it were only an AC with a gas furnace, it would have only operated half as much as it has as a heat pump.
So
not that they're wrong. I just don't know the condition of the existing equipment and whether – you know, you could more than likely fix it. Would it be fiscally sound to do that? Probably not as much, but we would still give you that option. Just so you know, here's the price to fix it. And then if you like, we'll give you a price on replacing it.
Because I think to fix it, George, what we would say is don't just pump more refrigerant in, regardless of its cost. Find, it's likely leaking at the coil, I think is what you're thinking, Scott. And so you could take that component out and replace it. But that component is not inexpensive, right?
If it's even readily available.
I get a second opinion. Like, I went to Angie's List and I got a couple people. But is there anyone else that I...
Yeah. So with the risk of sounding self-serving, Zeke and Scott won't say it. I will. I would call one of them. You can send us a note at askjohnanddave.com, and we can connect you to Charlotte Comfort Systems or Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. We have them on the show, George, for a couple reasons. Number one is they know a lot. And number two, over the course of 27 years, we have recommended that they help folks out, and all we've gotten back is positive feedback.
Right.
Especially when it comes to, hey, they didn't try. So he came and for $125 fixed everything I needed and didn't charge me or try to replace the unit or whatever. Right. So on the strength of that, that's how we would do it. So that would be our recommendation.
Okay. So, well, I should be good this winter, but come springtime when I have to put on my AC again, that's when I should, look around.
I would say
no.
You start looking now. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, look, because heat, you're still using the outdoor unit for heat unless you're going to switch back to all electric.
Now, that's what I switched back. The outside unit does not cut on now. He put it on so that just the natural gas works. That's all.
So he's got heat. It's not
a
heat pump.
Dual fuel system.
It's not a heat pump, I don't think.
Okay.
Or is it dual fuel?
Yeah, you should be fine.
Hang on one second, George. We ran way past the break here. I'm going to put you on hold for a second, and we're going to take a little break. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we're going to be right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Scott Shelton with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
And I am Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Thanks, guys. We're going to jump back over to George real quick. Bottom line is George has a fossil fuel-fired furnace and an air conditioner. The air conditioner is leaking refrigerant, and he's trying to figure out, do I replace the unit because that's what the people told him to do, or do I just kind of fix it and try to get along with it. And certainly through the winter, we can make that work. George, thanks for holding on through the break there. Not being able to bring him up here for a second. There we go. George, so I think you said, hey, you're going to be fine for the winter. And that's true. You won't be using refrigerant in the winter. Right. It's not a heat pump. But rather than wait to...
My wife likes it better because... when I'm using both the AC and the natural gas, the air is cool, but just coming out natural gas, the air is much warmer coming out. And she has never been a fan of the
Okay.
Of the heat front.
So it sounds like it's a dual fuel, Scott. I think you're right.
Yeah, it is a dual fuel.
Yeah. MP13 Linux.
Yeah. So I think, George, I think we've gotten as much of the diagnosis and help as we can give you on the air, right? You have a decision to make.
I got one more piece.
Oh, go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and buy it. Unfortunately, I would buy it now because you've already had 7 price increases this year. The prices are only continuing to go up.
Buy the whole another whole unit?
Well, buy
a new, buy the heat.
The AC or the heat or the heat pump portion.
I can't hear you.
He's saying you should go ahead and purchase the new unit, George. And his point is that the cost, there have been 7 price increases this year alone, probably driven by steel to some significant degree, because that index is up almost 400%, I think, year over year.
Okay, so when you say purchase a new unit, are you saying the furnace and the AC, the whole kit?
Well, if it's 14 years old and it's a dual fuel system, yes.
Furnace may be fine.
Probably $14,000-$15,000.
Well, have somebody get another quote and have them look at the furnace and give you pricing on the AC and or the furnace. And at least that way you have options.
Okay, so should I call my are you with Comfort Air by chance?
Hey, George, do you have a paper and pencil handy?
I sure do.
Okay, write this down.
Okay.
Ask, A-S-K, John and Dave.com.
Okay.
That's our website. If you go there, click on the questions button and just send us a question and say, help me get connected with HVAC people. And we will get you to Zeke and Scott, and they can come out and take a look at it. And you can kind of sit down at the kitchen table and think through what all the options might be.
Okay. Now, is Scott with Comfort Air by chance?
Yes, he is. No, he's not. He's with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
Oh, that's different from Comfort.
Yes, it
Air.
Is. And we typically recommend that it's a good practice to get a couple different opinions.
Okay.
Which you intuitively knew because.
I'll do that then.
Yeah, I think that's our best way to give you some good help.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time and effort.
George,
hang on. George, Zeke has something to say here. Go ahead.
Yeah. George, what I was going to say is, you know, yes, you're going to be okay as far as having heating this winter with the gas furnace. The problem is, like Scott was saying, price increases. We've already been notified by all the major manufacturers that there's going to be another price increase come January 1st. So you're going to have a price increase on the equipment, which means it's going to cost you more next spring or summer when you replace it, plus the fact that Piedmont Natural Gas, and you know, nationally, they're already saying that natural gas is going to be about 30% more this year than it was last year.
Yeah, I've heard that on TV, 30% more.
Okay. So now you're saying that you're going to have a price increase on your gas. You're going to pay at least 30% more on your gas,
mm-hmm.
which is really going to be more because you were using the heat pump before also.
Yep.
So your gas bill is probably going to double this winter if you look at it. And so, you know, and instead of spending that extra money all year long to eventually have to replace the unit next.
Okay, well, I will send an email to ask John and Dave and to give me you to call or somebody else to call.
That's a good plan, sir. We'll take care of it.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thank you for your
time.
Call, George.
Thank you, sir.
All right. I think the challenge there is too much. There's too many things to consider, right?
It will simplify itself once, you know,
a
couple of discussions have been made.
All right. So, folks, we're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Clearly, heating and cooling is our topic this morning, but we can talk about whatever else is important to you. So just give us a shout. We're happy to dig in on that. Zeke and Scott, I had written down some things. We know that we've been talking, and it's in the news a bunch, just the oil prices, natural gas prices, all those things are on the rise and probably not going to change in the foreseeable future. And so people are going to be really focused on things that they can do to save energy, right? And so I always, before we get on, I'll poke around the website and just look for some ideas and just stuff that could be helpful, right? And there's, I mean, I came up with almost 10 different things, but I wanted to get a couple of them run by you, because the first thing that shows up anytime you search for how to save energy is a programmable thermostat. And we had Ron Jarvis from, the Chief Sustainability Officer from the Home Depot on with us three weeks ago. And one of the things he said is like, hey, get a programmable thermostat. And then there's all kinds of versions of programmable thermostats, and some we get good reviews and mediocre reviews and bad reviews depending on them. But I wanted to talk a little bit about, so people are going to buy programmable thermostats, right? Ideally, they would have a thermostat that works or is either manufactured by the same company that did the units themselves or is compatible. But if they don't do that, like what advice would we give people who are going to go out and invest in a programmable thermostat? Is there?
I mean, there's so many options. It really comes down to what features and benefits they want from that thermostat. I'm not as big a fan, honestly. Unless someone is home all of the time, a lot of the thermostats try to dictate your comfort, meaning they'll build a schedule based on how you come and go mm-hmm. from home. And, it'll tie into your phone. So it'll use the geofencing from your phone to determine when you're on your way, when you're leaving. I like to have a little more control. And traditionally, if you find a temperature in your house that you're comfortable with, winter and summer, it's just as cheap to maintain that number as it is to bounce around it.
All right, we have Donna out there, and we have to take a break. So let's do this. We'll come back to that topic and any more. We're at 704-570-1110. Give us a call. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we're going to be back after these important messages. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Scott Shelton with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
Zeke out there? Maybe not. All right. We're taking calls. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. And we've got Donna on the line. Good morning, Donna. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you? Donna, good morning.
Good morning. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question. I have a new gas pack. In fact, I got it from Charlotte Comfort Systems. My old one, I had 14 years. Now, for about a five-year period on the end of the old one, I cut my thermostat down to 60. I'm a senior living on Social Security trying to save money. Now, I don't know, a friend of mine, her husband, he's actually an engineer, but he had said that by me doing that with these gas pack things, in other words, turning it down really low in the winter, and then on the old one, I think I kept it on 80 in the summer, he said that actually puts more wear and tear on the system, causing it not to last as long. Now, a few years ago, I bumped my heat up to 65. That was the end of the old one. I mean, I was freezing at 60. But now, with these new gas bills, I'm wondering, if I turn this down to 60 and I just start doing that again to save money, is there any validity to, in other words, is there a magic...
Donna, just to try to get to the point, is the question, will setting the thermostat lower or higher, depending on the season, cause undue wear and tear on the thermostat? Zeke, Scott?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I mean, it's going to operate the same whether it's, whether it's 60 inside or if it's 80 inside. The runtime might be a little bit longer, but... that's actually healthy for the equipment to have a longer runtime than it is to continually short cycle.
So the thermostat really is really kind of like a switch, Donna. And if you turn a light switch on and leave it on a long time, or you turn a light switch on and off and then back on again, I mean, it's not really that's what it's designed to do. Did I say that correctly, Zeke, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's going to shorten the life of anything is runtime. It's just like, you know, the temperature you have it on will affect the runtime, but by lowering the temperature, you're reducing the runtime, so it should last longer.
So it sounds like you're okay, Donna. Did we answer your question? Don, are you there? We may have lost Donna.
Okay, Don. I think it's best to find a number that you like and you're comfortable with, and just let the system. Once you achieve a given temperature, now all it's doing is coming on to maintain that temperature.
All right. So let's, Don, if that didn't get the question, give us a shout back or shoot us a note at askjohnanddave.com, and we'll get you connected with Zeke and Scott. And let's go next to Brian. Good morning, Brian. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. I hope you are as well.
We are. What's up?
I've got two issues. The first is regarding an exterior door in the back. It operated for years without a problem. Then the beginning of this summer, it suddenly started opening and closing with difficulty. And more seriously, the deadbolt hits the plate now on the bottom, mm-hmm. where it didn't before.
Mm-hmm. So that could be anything from a simple fix to a complex fix. You don't see cracks in drywall or anything around it, do you?
I haven't thoroughly inspected it, but okay. There's nothing obvious like that.
Okay. It could just be that how the hinges are in. And the first thing we would tell you to do is like the least expensive and the least dramatic thing, right? So if the door is dropping down, go to your top hinge. And on the part of the hinge that is fastened to the jamb, pull out the middle screw or one of the, there's I think four screws in there. So pull out the second or third screw. It's probably a short screw, and replace it with a like a 3.5-inch screw that'll go all the way through the jamb and all the way into the jack stud. And as you pull it tight, it'll pull that door back up ever so slightly and probably be enough to eliminate the sticking and get the deadbolt to clear the latch again. If that doesn't do it, and then you want to start looking for signs of maybe some foundation issues or shifting in the foundation. We've had a very wet season again, so it could be that. But I think the first thing you would do is just assume that or over a period of time, those screws have worked loose, and if you pull them back up tight, you will be fine.
Okay,
does that make sense?
We can move on to the second issue, which is furnace related. I've got a Lennox heat pump and furnace, and installed and maintained by Acosta. I've been very pleased with that. But now I notice on two of my registers a fine black dust accumulating, and I don't know whether that's soot or mold.
Okay.
The furnace units walk in the attic, and the registers are in the ceiling of the first floor and in the floor of the second floor.
Got it. So, Brian, let's do this. Awesome job setting the topic. I think we got a second to think. We're right up against the break again, so we're going to go ahead and take that break. We'll come back and answer those questions for you. So I'm just going to put you on hold, and Zeke and Scott, you guys can think about that. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to get back to Brian and many, many more questions after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Scott Shelton with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
We keep losing Zeke on those intros. Brian, thanks for hanging through the break there. I appreciate it. You set the topic really well. So Zeke and Scott, Brian's concern is, you know, he's been doing the maintenances and everything is going well, but he's starting to see this black dust or powder or something, and his concern is that it could be mold. What do you think?
If the ductwork and the equipment is in the attic, the mold is far less likely. But when you, if you go up in the attic and you look at the square ductwork that comes off of the unit, is it raw metal or does it have insulation on the outside?
Right. I don't have access to it right now. I'm 90% certain it's the raw metal.
Yeah, and that's what I was suspecting. That if it's smooth metal on the outside, on the inside you have a layer of fiberglass that's, you know, probably an inch and a half thick, and that's what you know, keeps the cold out and keeps the heat in the ductwork.
Right.
And that black film that you're seeing is over time, you know, especially if the house is more than, you know, 10 or 15 years old, that outer layer of that fiberglass insulation it tends to break down. The force of the air going over it is kind of like the force of water creating, you know, the Grand Canyon. So in that material, 95% of it is black. So if you see that black film on the registers, more than likely it's the interior lining of that ductwork just slowly disintegrating and being distributed through the duct system.
Now, I notice it more on the two registers on the south side of the house, which would be closer to the unit than the north side of the house, which would be further away. So would that...
Well, that makes sense. Because the closer the duct is to the blower, the more velocity the air has. You know, when air is lazy, it's going to take the path of least resistance. So the shortest ducts and the ones that are closest to the blower would be a likely spot for you to feel more airflow, and thereby, you know, maybe that's the best place within the ductwork, because that air moves around inside of that duct in a circle. But the ductwork is square, so there are places that get more air than others.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is clean those registers, and then you can test that material that's on them. But we see 99% of the time the mold is far more prevalent from a crawl space, because there's such a source of moisture in the soil.
Yeah, no, I'm on a slab, and obviously that's not where the units are either. The ductwork is original to the house, which makes it 20 plus years, but the furnace is probably about half of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have a strong suspicion that black. And does it spread out, or is it just like a dust that's on the register?
Seems to stick to the fins of the register, but kind of, you know, it looks to be evenly distributed. It's not heavy, but it's noticeable.
Because mold would tend to spread out and grow a little bit more, especially in the summertime. If it's more like a dust or a fine film, and you could easily have, you know, the next time that your service is done, they could cut a hole in the ductwork and just take a piece of tape and push it against that lining inside the ductwork and then show it to you. And you'd more than likely see that coating is just slowly breaking down. Because we see this a lot, where people think that it's probably mold. And when they have that black lined fiberglass ductwork like that, that's more than likely where it's coming from.
Is that something a mold test kit would detect?
It would. It definitely would.
You may want to consider that just for a peace of mind between now and your next, your next maintenance, Brian. And congratulations to you for due diligence with your systems. But you may
I
want to just pick up.
I didn't quite hear your statement. I should do what?
Just get a mold test kit. And take a sample of the black substance and see if it's mold. You can pick
you
up
have a recommendation of who to go to with that.
Just pick up. I mean, the Home Depot sells mold test kits. You can get mold test kits online. It's not like super rocket science, but it would at least determine whether it was an organic compound or the fiberglass breaking down.
Okay. And then is this by itself any reason to replace the ductwork?
Zeke, Scott?
Well, it's 25 years old, and the insulation values on today's code is probably double what the amount of insulation that you have now. But I would want to make sure that was the reason before, you know, you made the investment to replace it. So I would just want to investigate whether that black substance that you're seeing is the liner from that ductwork. And that test kit would give you a very strong indication that's probably the case.
Well, I'm glad I caught you guys on this Saturday when you were in.
We are too, Brian. Thank you for your call.
Bye then.
Bye, Brian. All right, let's go ahead and talk about that for a second, Zeke and Scott, because I had written that down as one of the things. We've always spoken about, you know, duct and how efficient are your ducts and so on and so forth. And we always kind of concluded, hey, that's a pretty big expense, and you want to be sure that it's going to pay off, right, in savings. As energy costs rise, is it your opinion that it becomes more intelligent or more fiscally responsible to invest in duct inspections and replacement?
Oh, most definitely. Because, you know, the ductwork that we were using 15, 18 years ago had an R value of 4.2. Now it's R8.
Okay,
I mean,
we could technically
use R6 in a crawl space, but you have to think when they tell you that this is a 16 SEER unit, that SEER rating was done with the equipment in a controlled environment with a completely sealed duct system. And if you have an older, you know, duct system that has leaks and issues, you're definitely not getting the efficiency of the heating or the air conditioning that you're paying for.
Got it.
So they're wholly dependent upon one another.
Got it. All right, I've got that written down. I want to come back to it in a minute, but we've got Mark who has a question on solar. So let's just see if we can get Mark in before the break. Mark, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, you guys. I've got a Cape Cod style house, and I don't know if that matters. We have plenty of sun in the back day, every day, intense sun. And I've been considering going solar and I'm just curious about it. I don't know a lot about it. Maybe you could sell me on it or sell me against it.
So, Zeke, you did solar for a while or have solar, right? Do you have comments or thoughts on that?
Well, I know Zeke put 15 panels on the roof of his garage.
We've lost Zeke for some reason.
I put 5 panels on my old house.
So you guys are saying solar to power this is a worthwhile investment.
North Carolina took away the solar tax credit that they had for almost a decade, and it was the largest in the country. But the too many private equity groups were doing solar farms and reaping the benefits, so they did away with it. I don't think the payback is there yet, unfortunately.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, Mark, it sounds like I hear that from more than one source, Mark, that it's an awesome idea. The challenge is you got to be up for a pretty significant investment, and part of your return on the investment cannot be, it can't be 100% financial. It has to be that you've also done something good for the environment, which is not a bad return on investment, by the way. But it's not going to be a truly big payback because it's still going to be a significant investment. And Mark, we're right up against the break again. Sure. So if you don't mind, I'm gonna put you on hold just in case we have some additional questions coming out of that, and we'll make sure we get them. And Linda, we see you out there. We're not going to let you go away. We want to make sure that you hang on, and we'll catch you after the break too. Zeke and Scott, thanks for being with us. We got more home improvement questions on HVAC and anything else going on in your house. Call us at 704-570-1110, and we'll chat when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to go right onto the line, to the phones here. We've had Linda waiting. We didn't get, I don't know if we got everything squared away with our last caller, but so note to askjohnanddave.com or give us a shout back. Let's talk right now to Linda. Linda, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hello.
How can we help, Linda?
There was a question that aired on Jeopardy last night that went something like this. I'm not sure if I have it totally correct, but you'll know what I'm talking about. There was an answer clue that went something like, no longer included in new houses, but if you need to get a replacement, use this Thomas Edison invention. And the answer was fuse box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what replaced the fuse box that's not going into new homes?
The breaker box. So it was probably, given that it was Jeopardy, you know, kind of a detail or geek out sort of question. A fuse, there's two types of fuses. There was like a screw-in fuse that had a filament in it, very similar to what you see conceptually in an automotive fuse still. And then there were buses, which were these big cartridge-looking things, and they had all kinds of different sizes. But again, there was a filament inside of that, and when the load for the electricity was unsafe, the filament burned and snapped, and the connection was broken, and no more electricity runs. That whole device or system has been replaced by a breaker box system, and the breakers do the same thing. They sense how much current is passing through, and they disrupt it. The advantage of a breaker box, Linda, is with the old fuse system, I used to take care of an old house in Philadelphia when I was in college, and they had a fuse box in the basement, and along the whole top of the box were all the fuses that would typically burn out, right, or get that would blow, and you would take the old one out and put a new one in. The advantage of a breaker box is when something gets overloaded, you correct the overload, turn the breaker off, and reset it, and you don't have to buy a new fuse.
So what are the repair or the maintenances that a homeowner would do before they called an electrician? This is all electrician work.
Yeah. No, so with the breaker box, which is how old is your home?
26 years.
Okay. So you have a breaker box, not fuses. And the only maintenance you would do is make sure that you don't overload circuits like a hairdryer and maybe a portable heater all on the same unit, and you fire them up all at once. You will trip the breaker. So you would go down or wherever your breaker box is and turn it off and reset it. Now, if you have a breaker that consistently trips, you want to call an electrician, because if there's not an excessive load on it, it could be as simple as the breaker wearing out, because they will wear out over a period of time. Or you could have a challenge or a problem in the lines themselves, and you would want an electrician to diagnose that. But as a day in and day out scenario, there's really no maintenance. Like, you don't have to go to your breaker box twice a year and check it out, right? You really, it's designed to be as maintenance free as possible, as long as you're operating electrical components safely. Does that help?
Mine is in the garage. Where are breaker boxes usually placed in a home?
In the garage, in the laundry room, Some I've seen them sometimes in a hallway headed to a mud room. There's some codes about where they need to be with respect to the distance from the meter now, I believe, and how much clearance you have to have. They have to be visible and accessible readily. But if your breaker box is in the garage and you haven't built cabinets around it or in front of it, you're fine.
Sounds good. Thanks for your help.
I'm glad we could help, Linda. Have a great one, okay?
All right. You too.
Bye. All right. Let's talk to Charlotte about some ductwork. Good morning, Charlotte. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm good.
How can we help?
My parents purchased a house with the crawl space. The HVAC duct that was attached to the crawl space vent mm-hmm. has fallen. It's been down on the ground for several months in the crawl space. Does this pose any issues?
Gentlemen?
Pardon me?
I was going to get Zeker Scott to comment. My answer is I think yes, but they should give you a better answer than that. So ductwork is sagging down in the crawl space, correct?
It has fallen from the exhaust vent or the crawl space vent.
Okay, so it's not even connected to the vent anymore?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, that's got to get fixed. Zeke, Scott, I mean, what could cause that or what should she do?
When she says ductwork, I'm not sure whether that's a ductwork trying to bring fresh air fresh air to the furnace or if it's because usually the ductwork would not go to the crawl space vent.
Okay.
Oh, so wait a minute. That's a great point. Now, is it a crawl space vent or a vent in the crawl space, like as in like a heating and cooling vent, or is it like a vent in the outside wall?
Heating and cooling ductwork was attached to the crawl space vent.
And that vent
fallen.
Yeah, so Charlotte, the vent that you're talking about, is that the vents that are in the side wall of your crawl space, or they're connected to something that goes up through the floor into the living space?
Mm. Now, the crawl space vent itself is still intact. Someone attached the HVAC duct to that crawl space vent.
Okay.
In the meantime, it has fallen.
Okay, hang on 1 second, Charlotte. That's like an entirely different thing. We can still get you through it, but we do have to take a quick break here. Hang tight for 1 second. We're going to pop you on hold, and I think we can give you some good advice. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. A little break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Sleek Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
And I'm Scott Shelton with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
Guys, thanks for being with us. We've got Charlotte on the line, and I think we've discerned that there was a duct of some sort connected to the exterior wall foundation vent. Charlotte, I'm sorry to be dense, but just to be clear, the duct has fallen off of one of the vents in the outside wall of the crawl space. Is that a correct understanding?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry to be dense. Although people who know me will say that that's a pretty common characteristic.
Hey, I don't know what I'm doing.
That's all right. You're in good company. We do have two good people here, though. Go ahead, Zeke.
Yeah, Charlotte, I guess my question is, was the crawl space encapsulated? When I say encapsulated, that means it's a plastic, white plastic film all the way around the crawl space?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I have no idea why somebody...
If it's a real old house, years ago, they would take a 6-inch round pipe and run it to one of the vents to bring fresh air into the house. And they would attach that round pipe to the return, so when the fan came on, it would pull outside air in just to get fresh air. That's the only thing I see that would make sense.
Okay, now this is a flexible duct.
Let me ask you a question. Is this something that you've seen yourself, or just you're relaying information as it was given to you?
I've seen it.
Okay.
And it doesn't come up through the floor. It attached to the vent through the foundation.
Okay. Now, I haven't seen it come through the floor. I just noticed it when I was opening or closing their crawl space vents when the seasons mm-hmm. change.
Well, do you have a company that comes out once a year or twice a year and does routine maintenance on the heating or the cooling system?
Someone was just out there. They did maintenance. My mom, I hope, did mention that to them, and they said they would come back and fix it, the flexible duct, which had fallen.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe, is there a floor register just on the, you know, on the other side of that wall? Was there a floor register in the house? Because it could be that it just the boot just fell off of the floor, and it just happens to be that it's right at the crawl space vent.
Okay, I was just curious if this posed a problem, say for mold or carbon monoxide.
No, other than
not carbon monoxide.
Yeah. Bugs and, you know, critters, you know, getting in the house and getting in the ductwork. That's the biggest thing.
Okay.
So the registers where the warm and cool air come out in the house, they're flat in the floor throughout the house?
These are on the side of the house. The tie.
No, I meant like if you're in the house, the registers where the heat or the air conditioning comes out from the heating and cooling system.
They are in the floor, yeah.
Okay, so I would go in the house and go to that vent that is closest to that opening, the crawl space door opening where that duct is down,
mm-hmm.
and lift up those registers and look down. And if you see the crawl space, your boot has fallen loose. Uh-huh. And if the ductwork is all connected, then it was something that was connected to a foundation vent.
Okay.
That would be the easiest way.
Does that help?
Okay. Yes, it does. I appreciate it.
We appreciate the call, Charlotte. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Best of luck with it.
All right. So that's there's just a lot of duck questions this week. and I guess I'm not surprised. And maybe it's just because we started talking about ducks. Zeke, I'm just curious. If that was an old scenario where that's how they brought like fresh air into the house, if fresh air is still needed, there's much better ways to do that now, correct?
By far.
I think we're losing Zeke coming back. But yeah, so there's, I mean, talk to that, what the options are just real quick. And then I want to move on to a couple things to like maximize heat during the winter when things are very expensive.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, bringing in raw, unfiltered air like that, we don't see it very often, but it is a good way to create bacterial growth inside the equipment and inside of the ductwork. And if it's not installed properly, you're bringing in that air and it's not being filtered, which could just add to the debris that would build up on your, you know, secondary heat exchanger or your evaporator coil.
Got it.
Because we look at a lot of duct systems and people, you know, there's not a book that says here's how long something should last. But if your duct system is, you know, more than 20 years old, odds are when it was put together, the standards were different than they are now. And of course, the insulation values are far less than what they are now. So, you know, if it's 25 or 30 years old, it would be a good time to consider, you know, replacing that ductwork and bringing it up to a far tighter standard as far as how much leakage that you have and, of course, how much energy it's going to save you.
Got it. Okay. All right. So let me kind of change topics for a second. Again, going through suggestions, and I poke around a bunch on like the Reader's Digest home improvement websites and This Old House websites. And so I just like to read the stuff that's going on there. And there's some things like one thing that we've talked about before is and it's especially relevant, I think, in the wintertime is something called the stack effect. What is that mm-hmm. and why? What do you do to, you know, is it good or is it bad? And how do you fix it?
If you think about why so many people encapsulate their homes, mm-hmm. seal their crawl spaces. It's yes. because of the stack effect. You're, you know, physics 101 tells us that, you know, warm air is going to migrate to a cooler place
when it rises.
And so your house breathes from the ground up. So if you have a crawl space and it's not sealed, you know, almost we have such nice red wet clay soil here that there's a lot of moisture. And what do you need to grow mold and mildew? Well, you need moisture, a dark space, and not a lot of air movement. That's, you know, the perfect scenario for a crawl space. So the stack effect, if you seal your crawl space, is really mitigated. Now, of course, the heat in the house is still going to rise to the right. highest point.
Right.
But you're not also going to be bringing any of the microbial or bacterial elements that are in the crawl space into the house.
I got it. So, okay. So two things, it sounds like. One is bringing funk, to use a technical HVAC term, from the crawl space into the house, because hot air rises. Nature abhors a vacuum, so it's going to suck air from somewhere. It's going to suck it from whatever holes have access to the crawl space. Let's say the crawl space is cleaned out and you know, it encapsulated correctly. Then it's going to suck air from underneath a door frame that leaks, or from a window that leaks, or something like that. Is that correct?
It is. Okay. But the main reason that you would see, I bet half the houses now have those automatic foundation vents that you yeah. can buy at the yeah. home improvement stores.
Yep.
Well, they're not really made for our market because they open when it gets hot. And so now you have nice, hot, humid air outside and your foundation vent opens. Well, that air is going to go to your nice, cool crawl space. And when that humid air hits your nice, cool ductwork, it condenses and creates moisture, which works its way yeah. from the ground, evaporating up into your floor system. And that's where a lot of mold and mildew come from.
Got
so
it.
The other feature when you encapsulate is you get rid of those foundation vents. You seal them closed so that what's going on outside the foundation does not affect what's going on inside of it.
I got it. Okay. Folks, I'm bad today keeping track of time and getting the number out there. Our number is 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're talking home improvement with special emphasis on heating and cooling, probably heating this time of year, because we have Zeke Acosta from Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, and Scott Shelton from Charlotte Comfort Systems in with us. Well, not in studio. We're still not there yet. But they're on in the house with us, so to speak. So give us a call. We'll talk about those things, whatever's important to you. Zeke and Scott, when we come back, I want to talk about a couple things, little tricky things that we might be able to do to make the heat that we get most effective. And then also want to talk about thermostats, maybe not even programmable thermostats, but we touched the topic of thermostats and runtime and things like that when Donna called in. And I'd like to go back to that just for a minute, because I was reading some stuff that I didn't quite understand, and I bet you guys know all about it. So, folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we're going to be back after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon. All right. The boys are quiet. We've got Zeke Acosta and Scott Shelton. Zeke with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, and Scott with Charlotte Comfort Systems. If you guys are on a long coffee break, cool. I'll talk until you rejoin. You guys. All right. I'm just messing. So, hey, I have a question, and I was reading, and this is like the ignorant, you know, ignorant minds want to know. So I read that, you know, cycling, I know that in the summertime, cycling of a cooling system is problematic, right? Because it can cool, but it doesn't take the moisture out. In the heating time, it's kind of naturally more dry, but there was a whole thing about energy efficiency in the heating season, and it talked about rapid cycling, and it talked about making an adjustment on something about like from 1 second to 1.5 seconds or cycle time or something like that. Is that just silly stuff, or is that something
you
could do?
I think what you're saying is in most thermostats, you can set how many cycles per hour the heating system will initiate.
Okay.
you know, and it, you know, a small number would be, you know, three, and a large number would be, you know, seven or eight. And that's just going to vary depending upon the colder it is outside, the more cycles you might have, you know, depending upon how tight your house is.
Okay, so this I found it. To stop rapid cycling, make sure the cycle rate adjustment in the thermostat setup mode reads from 1 degree to 1.5 degree. If you change it, move it higher. Does that mean something different?
It does. So what that's saying is when you look at a digital thermostat, all you see is whole numbers.
Right.
But it's actually working in tenths. And I think what it's saying is instead of having a 1 degree point of operation, meaning if it's set at 72, when the temperature gets to 71, it's going to kick the heat on.
Right.
That adjustment would mean if it's set at 72, it wouldn't come on until 70 and a half. It's going to use a degree and a half dead band to initiate the furnace.
Okay. So thank you for explaining that. The next question then is, what do you think? Is that smart? Is that first off, that doesn't sound like a do-it-yourself job.
It is. I mean, honestly, if you get like we use more Honeywell thermostats than mm-hmm. When we go generic.
Yep.
And there's a menu inside of the Honeywell thermostat that has at least 500 settings that you can walk your way through and change and set up and have the ability to control, because, you know, these generic thermostats have to basically be able to do anything
all
to
kinds of different
control
systems.
Any yeah. type of equipment.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. All right. So
the thing that you don't get is that dehumidification control in the air conditioning mode when you use a generic thermostat.
Right. So let me ask this question then. If my goal is to save energy, I understand now that like the heat won't come on until it gets to 70 and a half versus 71 if it's set at 72. But is somehow a longer run time? Because then now it's going to take longer to return to 72 because I'm at 70 and a half versus 71. Is there energy savings to be had in that process?
I think that's a way to try it. The what they're not telling you is what's the real reason that you're having a short cycling issue.
Mm-hmm.
The real reason is that the furnace heat output is probably too big. And it's, you know, it has to be sized to the air conditioner. So when you get into the larger blower sizes, you also get into the larger furnace output sizes. So when you may only need 50,000 BTUs, but you have an 80,000 BTU furnace to meet the blower size for the air conditioner, that's just a way to stop that short cycling. But the negative to it is now the temperature swing in the house is also a little bit larger. So when you're sitting in your chair Saturday morning and you're reading the paper or listening to this show, it's going to drop another half degree or so before it initiates. And it might actually go a little higher than that 72 when it cuts off. And then it's going to drop back down. So you're just making the arc of the pendulum a little bit longer.
Got it. So, all right. So not necessarily big energy savings to be had there. Is that?
I think the energy savings come from finding a temperature that's comfortable for you, put it there, and forget about it.
And leave it alone. Yeah.
Because let's say most people get out of bed in the morning and they had it at 65 because they like to sleep in a cold room.
Yeah.
And they raise it to 72.
Yes.
They've got to cover 7 degrees of heat rise.
Yeah.
So once you get to that 72, it's a whole lot cheaper to maintain 72 than it is to go from 65 to 72.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay. All right. We're going to be close to a break here. I think, interestingly enough, it sounds like that there could be a couple schools of thought on the whole idea of a programmable thermostat, or at least a programmable thermostat. And I think that's what you and Zeke have always told us, is you keep it within a couple degrees max. And that way you get a little bit of variation and comfort, particularly cooler in for sleeping and not, you know, bust the bank on electrical or heating and cooling costs. All right. We've got another break to take. We're going to take in about 20 seconds here, folks. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Last chance to give us a call and get questions in Our partners at Charlotte Comfort Systems and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, they are with us today taking questions. You can always get to them via us at AskJohnAndDave.com. Click on the questions button and say, hey, connect me with the guys, and we'll know what you mean. So we'll talk more home improvement, more heating, cooling, and air conditioning when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Scott Shelton with Charlotte Comfort Systems.
And I'm Sneak Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
We can't wait to get back in the studio, can we?
It's time.
Oh, it's all right. Maybe we should do, you know, I record another, just because I'm bored to tears, I started another radio show in Atlanta, not home improvement related, but we Zoom. We set up a Zoom meeting and then mute everybody and then do the connection like this so we can at least see each other. Maybe we should think about doing that. I don't know. All right. That's not what people want to hear about, though. They want to hear good information. I've got like a whole bunch of things that I still haven't asked about. But maybe we touched a little bit on the topic earlier, that the fact that the price of systems is going to increase. And I know that I don't deal with HVAC very often, but I deal with water heaters a lot for some very large customers. And used to be I would kind of look at a price with our merchant in February, and we would set a price, and that price was good all year long. And many times we would look at it again the following February and say, hey, it's great, you know, rock on with your bad self, no need to make changes. In 2021, that price has changed a whole bunch of times. I think Zeke or Scott, one of you, said 7 increases this year, and that's kind of comparable to what we've seen in that arena as well. And it, a lot of it is driven by component issues, and a lot of it is driven by, steel is a component and a major component. But my sense is the cost of things is going to go up. And so people who have to replace systems are going to be looking to cut corners and save money wherever they can. So as they think about the features that are in a system from a kind of there's a very basic system for heating that does whatever it needs to do. And then there's probably some upsells in it. Are there some specific things that you would encourage people to consider because the cost of investment on the front end saves money on the back end?
I would go with efficiency and humidification or dehumidification. Those two things are very important in this area. I mean, you know, and if I had to choose between a furnace efficiency or a heating efficiency and dehumidification for the Charlotte, I would put more weight on the dehumidification, being able to dehumidify versus the heating, because heating is already fairly high, and
you've got to look at the runtime. We use about 1,400 hours a year of cooling and only about 900 hours a year of heating.
Right. So for in our climate, the efficiency is on the cooling side, although if you're a heat pump, it's pretty close. But so efficiency on the cooling side, and then Zeke, to your point, whatever you do, deal with dehumidification and humidification. And so when you talk about that, I've learned from y'all that dehumidification is very much a function of the thermostat that you choose. So it's a thermostat
and
humidistat combination, correct?
With a true variable speed blower.
Okay, go ahead, Zeke. Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the variable speed indoor section, whether it's a furnace or an air handler, the variable speed is what helps you be able to dehumidify. Depending on what the temperature, the humidity is, it can lower the fan speed to get more humidity out of the air.
Get it? So it moves air more slowly across the coil, taking out more moisture.
Right.
Okay, I got it. And then on the humidification side, which is what we're going to be thinking about this time of year, because all of a sudden all of our crown molding, you know, has got gaps in it and our throat's dry in the morning and all that nonsense. What's the best solution from a humidification standpoint?
Well, like Scott was saying, it's the number of run hours. And if you go to a typical just bypass humidifier, you don't have enough run hours to put the humidity in the house that you need. So you really just about have to go with a steam-type humidifier. And that way, it creates the steam. It puts the moisture in the ductwork, whether the furnace is on or not. So you get humidity into the house, even in the, you know, mild days or when the furnace is not running.
Okay. All right. Good. I'm running down my list here like a crazy man. So I got another question.
But there's one more thing.
Oh,
you can
I'm sorry.
Do
go
to
ahead.
Help.
Go ahead.
There's one more thing you can do to help with that humidification.
Okay.
So the question where you said, you know, make it 1.5 degrees instead of 1 degree. The common problem is that the furnace is oversized. So it'll come on, run a very short amount of time, heat the house up and cut back off.
Got it.
On your better furnaces, you can get, you know, 2 stages of heat or 70 stages of heat. Ooh. So if you have a smarter furnace, that'll work at a much lower output. Keeps the house more even, doesn't dry everything out, and it can negate nearly as much of a need for having a humidifier.
I see.
So if the furnace is kind of like the transmission in your car, it slows down the amount of heat based on what speed you actually need to heat or cool the house.
Right. So there's something generating the heat, and it's just moving air across it more slowly. And
so if your furnace is working at 100% capacity, it's going to heat very quickly. But if it drops down and it only works at 30% capacity, it's a lot more cost effective. It makes the temperature in the house even, and you don't get those fluctuations where, you know, it's 72.5, it's 70.5, it's 72.5. It just maintains that given temperature.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes good sense. So then the ultimate question. Well, I just want to get very practical. Let's get away from the technical for a second, because my question is, do we think gas and propane are still the most economical way to go? Let's don't go there just yet. Let's talk about some real practical things that exist today. Well, I mean, that's practical, but so you've got a fireplace, and if you have a wood burning fireplace, they're awesome, you know, very romantic, all that good stuff. But a ton of heat escapes. We've kind of said, hey, if you're just not totally, you know, enamored of the smell of burning wood and the crackle of the fire and all those things, although some of the, like, you know, gas logs are pretty realistic. We've always said, hey, go away from, you know, wood burning, close the flue and put a vent free, gas logs in. As we see a increase in the cost of natural gas and propane, do we think that, like, the era of the fireplace is gone for a while, or is it still practical to shut down the wood burning flue and go gas logs?
Based on the amount of effort that it takes to you know, utilize a wood burning fireplace, most people are just going to the logs.
Yeah. And we think that's still a prudent decision.
Oh, I'm on board. I think it makes a lot more sense. It's just, you know, instant heat or you know, comfort or ambiance when you want it, instead of lugging wood and cleaning out the hearth and starting
splitting
over
wood.
Again. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Can't forget that. All right. Zeke, what do you, I mean, same, you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the fireplace, it's nice. And if you just gathering around in the living room or den and you want to have a fire going, it's more for aesthetics or pleasure, not for heat. I mean, even the vent free, a lot of heat's going out the chimney and being, you know, unused. And their best efficiency you're going to get out of it is probably going to be about 75% efficient. Well, if you put that same amount of heat into the furnace, you're getting 80 to 95% efficiency. So heat, cost of heat itself is going to be best to use the furnace, not the fireplace.
Got it. Which okay, so really it boils down to what we said, or one of the comments that I made was it's really more about aesthetics and just having an ambiance that's enjoyable. It's not about, hey, we're going to be more efficient by heating the house with gas logs versus running the furnace.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I guess if you have one room that you're going to be in and it's got gas logs in it, you can be cooler in the rest of the house and be comfortable. The challenge then becomes, to Scott's point, hey, great, but now when you want to be in the rest of the house and you want it to recoup its temperature, you're going to burn fuel to get there. So it sounds like if we come away from with one big thing on this in this conversation, and we talked about a lot of different stuff, it really is a steady as she goes with respect to temperature change. Like, don't take it down to 65 in the evening and bring it back up to 70 when you get up. Keep it within a couple degrees, or Scott, even to your point, get to a number and be done. So I would argue that that's good advice. Time well spent for the 2 hours we had, and that means we're 2 hours are done. So Zeke and Scott, always, always grateful for you guys coming in, spending the time, sharing your wisdom with us. We really appreciate it. Sounds like I'm going to get you guys connected to a couple folks from email, so we'll make sure we happen that this week. Folks, we want to remind you every week that we think the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that this week, and we'll see you next week on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.